Today on the 21st Show, black drivers in Illinois are pulled over at rates higher than their white peers. That has been known for decades, but a new analysis details how those patterns play out at the state's public universities. We'll talk to one of the reporters behind the story and experts in the world of criminal justice and civil rights. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Bloomington Normal, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We've known for a long time that black drivers across Illinois and the country get pulled over by police at higher rates than white drivers. Those stops can be frightening, demoralizing, and sometimes deadly. A new analysis from the Investigative Project on Race and Equity, along with WBEZ in the Chicago Sun-Times, has found those disparities extend to the state's public college campuses, too. Black drivers are being pulled over at rates higher than both black student enrollment suggests and the black population of the surrounding communities. In a few minutes, we'll talk with criminal justice and civil rights experts about some of the findings, but we start with one of the reporters behind the story. Nicole Janine Johnson is a journalist with the Investigative Project on Race and Equity. Nicole, welcome to the 21st Show.
Good morning.
And listeners, you can always join us throughout the hour today, 800-222-9455. Especially if you have experience with this, we'd love to hear about it if you're willing to talk about it. Of course, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. All right, Nicole, talk about how you see these disparities in your reporting playing out across the state.
Well, you know, we know that. First, it's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having us. Every campus is a different part of the state. You've got rural, you've got suburban, you've got city. So depending on how that university interacts with the local municipality, they might be the only law enforcement agency in that area, or they might be one of many, like take for Chicago, there's many different law enforcement agencies here. So it just depends on how they engage with other law enforcement agencies. It also depends on the relationship between the campus, the larger campus community, depending on the administration and the relationship that the law enforcement agency has with the larger campus community in terms of students. I know when I spoke with the chief of police from Illinois State University, you know, he mentioned how he's got deep relationships with a lot of the organizations down there. The NAACP has a advisory board with student groups and students that represent different faculty members. That might not be the case for different organizations. I mean, different law enforcement agencies across the state.
Yeah, and I certainly know the example of Urbana-Champaign, for example. You have Urbana Police, Champaign Police, U of I Police. There's also the Champaign County Sheriff's Office. Maybe we can talk about Northern Illinois University as another example. What are some of the data that you found about NIU?
Absolutely. So with NIU, they've got 13%, about 13% of our adults are Black. But, you know, overwhelmingly, we saw that most of their drivers are, that they're stopping are Black. And so it's not necessarily comparative when it comes to the, you know, the number of students that are enrolled or even the people, the Black people or the demographics of the people in the larger area. We did have a situation. You know, one of our students that we spoke with attended there. And, you know, when he got stopped, he wasn't sure whether sometimes they're not even sure if they're being stopped by campus police or if they're being stopped by local municipality police. They just know I got pulled over and then I have a court date. And so for a lot of our students, for students that we spoke with, and by and large, those that even didn't even make the story, this is their first brush with the legal system. And they're just going in wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and not knowing what to do and what to say. And so that's one of the things that we definitely found, particularly with that school.
And there was somebody at Southern Illinois University who was pulled over repeatedly, he said.
Absolutely. So Michael, who's our lead story, wonderful gentleman from the west side of Chicago, went to SIU's first SIU Carbondale. He's the first in his family to go to school, and he's an artist and studying education, artistic education. And he got pulled over so many times. He wasn't even sure, I guess because the legal system was so confusing to him, he wasn't sure, is my license suspended now or is it not? Is it this? Is it that? And they'd say, yeah, it is. And he's like, well, I have another day. Like he had so many dates. He had to think about, okay, I know I have to go to court on December 5th, but he got stopped right before his expiration, and that's why some of the other tickets were thrown out. But Michael had a very harrowing time, and so he just feels like whether he's on the west side of Chicago or even on campus, that he's going to get pulled over because that's what it felt like.
Maybe we should take a step back and talk about how Illinois state law makes an analysis like this possible.
Absolutely. So, when former President Barack Obama was in office in the Illinois General Assembly, he put forth this, this legislation to say, hey, we need to start checking and tracking traffic stop data based on demographics. And ACLU, who we spoke with, played a very instrumental part in making sure that that actually passed through the legislature. So since then, states, I mean, law enforcement agencies across the state have been self-reporting, and they have to report the traffic stop data. And recently, at first it was going to expire, but then recently Governor Pritzker made sure that it would be collected into perpetuity. So there always be that transparency during the traffic to collect the traffic stop data. Over the years, it hasn't been something that people have actually brought up, or even on the university base, because we are talking about universities, but every law enforcement agency across the state, no matter if it's for a school or county or what have you, they have to report this data. And so the state will hire a third party to do their own analysis and put a report out. And then that's when it gets kind of hazy, because the third party, how they use different factors to do their per capita when they do their analysis, what they're comparing it to, right? Different researchers and analysts disagree with how they did it. And so it kind of puts a sour taste in the mouths of those agencies, because they're like, well, this data isn't analyzed correctly. And so they reject it. But what we've been telling them in our outreach to them is saying, hey, we actually pulled the raw numbers that you submitted to the state over the last few decades, and we did our own analysis, even though that it was brought up. ICESJA actually put out a best practices on
That's
how they
the
could.
Illinois Criminal Justice Information
Yes.
Authority, yes.
Yes. They actually put out a report over the last year or so, where they were saying we need to do a better job with how this data is analyzed through third party, so that people will be more inclined to take it as an accurate depiction of what's going on the ground, as opposed to, oh, we don't agree with how you made that analysis. But at the end of the day, the data is self-reported, and so the way we've analyzed it and presented it to the municipal the law enforcement agencies is, hey, this is what you submitted. And so it gives them a stark picture. And then I guess the next step there in terms of the analysis is really how the campus communities should take it up and continue a conversation with their students and student organizations and faculty and staff, so that all students feel safe.
Yeah, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Nicole Janine Johnson, who co-authored a recent study looking at police pulling over motorists on college campuses and found that black drivers are stopped at much higher rates than the percentage of black students or even black people in the community around the campus would suggest would be a comparable figure, I guess. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. You know, you mentioned the response from the departments. You did reach out to a number of these campuses and their police departments. Some of the police chiefs declined to be interviewed, but you did get statements. What did they have to say?
Absolutely. So you've got a wide range of responses on the, as best as you could as a reporter, Illinois State, Aaron Woodruff, the chief of police there, he's been there for almost two decades. He's been there and he was very responsive. He spoke with me for an hour. And, you know, even though he did have some pushback around how the data was analyzed, he was one of those examples of where I said, hey, this isn't the report that you're speaking of. We actually analyzed this data. He did mention about how he works with the larger community. He's a member of the NAACP. He mentioned that he actually pushed the Board of Trustees to get body cams way before the Safety Act that Governor Pritzker passed that required body cams on all law enforcement agencies. He actually was way ahead of that deadline because he said, let's just get in front of this and get it out there. So he advocated for that on the earlier end. So they were all in compliance. That was a requirement to be done by 2025 this year. So Illinois State University Police, they already had those things in place. He knows that bias plays a role in traffic stops. And he actually, when he started leading the department, he mentioned that they had, what, a 13-page training manual, and he worked it and increased the pages and the content so that he was covering all bases for his officers so that they knew how to manage each situation. And then you have on the other end in responses where, you know, we've been emailing folks for 2-3 months and they just would not respond. I remember trying to speak with Northeastern Illinois, that's on the northwest side of the city of Chicago. And, you know, email, and saying, okay, once we're getting close to publication, all right, so we're just going to say you didn't respond. And then they call and they say, oh, what is this about? Oh, and then they just keep giving you the runaround. They may or may not even give a statement. I do know that Jason Johns, who's the chief of police from NIU, interim chief of police, he declined an interview, but he did mention that, you know, the data is hard to disentangle, but he mentioned that all the officers represent a wide spectrum of ethnicities and identities and race. So he was at least trying to say that, hey, we have someone that on the patrol that represents or looks like each, every one of the students that we, you know, we provide service for public safety. So you get a wide range of those responses from the campus law enforcement leaders.
Well, if people want to read more, the piece is called At Illinois Public University's Campus Cops Pull Over Black Drivers at Higher Rates. It was co-authored by Nicole Janine Johnson with the Investigative Project on Race and Equity. Nicole, thank you so much for sharing this reporting with us today on the 21st show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we're going to now bring in some experts to talk about what Nicole's report found and the toll these inequalities and inexperiences can take on the people who are living them out in real time. With me for that is Kadeen Bennett, Director of Advocacy and Intergovernmental Affairs for the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois. Kadeen, welcome back to the 21st show.
Thanks for having me again.
Also joining us, Miltonette Craig, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Criminology at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. She was previously a professor at Illinois State University. Professor Craig, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And DeVarian Baldwin is a historian He's a distinguished professor of American Studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. He's quoted in the piece we were talking about a moment ago. He's also the author of several books. His current project is called Land of Darkness, Chicago and the Making of Race in Modern America. Professor Baldwin, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Listeners, again, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Professor Craig, we need to take a break on the show in a couple of minutes, but I just want to start with you, get your sort of baseline reaction to the reporting we have been talking about.
It is not surprising, but I found it innovative in the double benchmark. So I definitely want to give props to Nicole and the team. So when agencies are confronted with their data that shows that they are overstopping certain populations of motorists, their first response will be, well, there's a problem with the benchmark. And so in the literature, that's referred to as the denominator problem. And so the agencies will say, well, the way you are running your analyses, what you're using to say that we're overstopping isn't accurate because the people who drive through our jurisdiction are different than the people who live in our jurisdiction. And you're using the local population as your benchmark or your denominator. So when the team now has two different benchmarks, that really goes to show that, no, we're using your data and different ways of analyzing and interpreting the data, and we're still coming to the same conclusion. There are stark disparities, and there is explaining that the agencies need to do.
All right. Like I said, we need to take a break. We are going to continue our conversation about this story, which came from the WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times and the Investigative Project on Race and Equity. It looks at Illinois Public University's traffic stop data and found that campus police are pulling over Black drivers at much higher rates than their statistics on campus and the community would suggest. 800-222-9455 to join us. This conversation will continue after a short break. This is The 21st Show. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we are talking about a recent study from the Chicago Sun-Times, WBEZ, and the Investigative Project on Race and Equity, which found that at public universities in Illinois, campus police are pulling over Black drivers at much higher rates than the student population of African Americans would suggest, and the percentage of African Americans in the surrounding communities around campuses. We are talking about that now with three experts in this area, broadly speaking. Milton Nett Craig is professor of criminal justice and criminology at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. She was previously on the faculty at Illinois State. Devarian Baldwin is a historian, a professor of American Studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. He is quoted in the story I just referred to. And Kadeen Bennett is director of advocacy and intergovernmental affairs at the ACLU of Illinois. 800-222-9455 to join us. 800-222-9455. Professor Baldwin, I want to bring you into the conversation now. What effect can it have on a Black driver to get pulled over by police, especially if, like some of the students in this story, this is their first adult experience with policing?
Yeah, it's a great question. It can, you know, there are times when you have these stories and individuals will say, well, you know, it's fine. There was a stop, there was an arrest made, or there was some surveillance, or there was some, you know, momentary inconvenience, and they walked away alive. And so everything's fine. But I think that really undermines the humanity of particularly the Black folks who are undergoing this undue surveillance. From the perspective of that, the fact that they walked away alive, things should be fine, is they don't have a life of value, that the inconvenience, the surveillance, the indeterminacy of your place in the criminal justice system, the feeling of always being under a watchful eye, that you're doing something wrong, all these things can have a significant impact on you. And you mentioned the book that I'm working on now, but the work that I do on policing comes out of a book called In the Shadow of the Ivory Tower that looks at the broad impact of higher education institutions on our communities, with a particular focus on policing. And so in the 150 interviews that I conducted for that work, there were students over and over again talking about having to wear the campus uniform, i.e. over wearing students, excuse me, school paraphernalia to show that they belong, where their white counterparts don't have to do that. But on top of students, also a disproportionate number of low-wage workers on campuses are Black and Brown, and primarily women in the cafeterias and the grounds crew. And they also report significant levels of undue harassment. So just trying to do your job, just trying to live your life, knowing that you are under greater surveillance because of past histories, because of current conditions, and because of future suspicions, can be harrowing, can be demoralizing, can be traumatizing. And to just simply say that, hey, you walked away alive. That really actually speaks to the ways in which Black life is undervalued.
Your story there about students sort of overwearing their campus paraphernalia, it reminds me of that the name of the author is escaping me. Whistling Vivaldi, Claude Steele, that's what it was, right? Who says that he's an African American sociology professor. He would walk down the street whistling Vivaldi as a way to signal to people, I think in Chicago, that he was not threatening to them. Goes to that point. Kadeen Bennett, let me bring you into the conversation. What advice do you give to drivers who are pulled over to police in one of these traffic stops?
Well, first, one of the things, I guess, even before giving advice, is just to, I think one of the things Nicole talked about was the response to law enforcement about the data that's out there. And I think it's really important to recognize that these are people who already feel surveilled in all aspects of their life who are having this experience as well. And being pulled over can be really overwhelming. It can feel really fearful and not sure what to do. And I think acknowledging that is important. I think when there is an encounter with law enforcement, I think it's really important, especially if somebody feels comfortable. If it's not clear why they were being stopped, asking why they were being stopped, if they feel like that encounter was based on any kind of, being profiled, or, there was no real reason for them being stopped, it's really important to make a complaint. There are ways to do anonymous complaints so that there's a record. And I think that's really important for situations where if it's one officer or a couple of officers who disproportionately stop Black and Brown people or Black students in this case over others, I think that's a really important note to have. It's also important to be, I appreciate what Nicole is doing in terms of getting the story out. I think it's really important to talk about that experience with their college, universities, I don't know, whatever, a student affairs coordinator that's there to signal that that what has happened to them. So again, there's a record with the university along with the whatever police department, either municipal or campus police as well.
Let me remind people you can join us today at 800-222-9455. We're going to get to the callers in just a moment here. And in fact, I think to lead into that, I want to share a comment from one of the stories. And some of the campuses and police departments deny that this has anything to do with racial bias. In fact, SIU Carbondale spokesperson Kim Renfeld says in the story, quote, "Our sole motivation for traffic stops is public safety, regardless of the driver's race or other characteristics," end quote. And with that, I'm going to go to the phones. John is calling in from Harvard, Illinois. John, thank you for calling in.
Sure. Thank you for having me. I'll just say that I have a state trooper, Illinois state trooper friend, and a Minnesota state trooper friend, and they hate this because they say when you have a car flying at you from a quarter mile away at 130 miles an hour, they aren't able to see through the glass. They aren't able to judge who that is. They just know there's a reckless driver coming at them. And I don't can't speak to why this is disproportionate to one population or another, younger drivers, male drivers probably. But the point is, you can do this exercise anytime you want. Walk out onto the street and look a block away and see if you can see into any cars these days, tinted windows. You aren't going to be able to tell the race or sex of anybody until they're right up on you. So the idea that they're profiling, what they're profiling is very erratic, bad driving behavior, and that's why, I'm standing up for my friends who have to deal with this all the time with their commanders, that they're pulling over the drivers that are causing trouble. That's it in a nutshell.
Sure. All right, John, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that perspective. I appreciate it. Professor Milton at Craig, can you respond to that? And I guess maybe we should say that, yeah. Actually, I don't know if they're
yes,
working.
Definitely. Yeah, thank you, because I was going to ask to respond. And I believe that the caller definitely has a point in that officers who are doing their jobs well are connected to public safety interests when they are making their stops. But I think making a blanket statement like that ignores the fact that the disparities still exist. And there are other phenomena at play. So there is something called car profiling, which happens and is not something that is new. So even if the officer cannot see the driver, you can make presumptions from the car in that if it is an older model car that has certain outside features, you can then make a presumption about who the driver is. And those things are used as proxies because there's going to be lots of people speeding and an officer can't pull over every single person that they see speeding. So it is very consequential what car they are choosing to pull over. And so that needs to be a part of the bias trainings too that agencies are having. And the other part of it is that constituents, including the student population, should ask of their agencies, what is the purpose of the traffic stop policies that the agency is using? Is it that they want to decrease the number of accidents in the jurisdiction? Are they trying to lower the average speeds for safety reasons? Do they want fewer impaired drivers on the road? So if a department wants to be transparent, they're going to tell people why they engage in these particular tactics. And then that allows for the community to say, okay, let's look at the before and after. Is the strategy that you're using achieving the goal? And in addition to that, what is the larger harm on the community? If people are feeling overly surveilled all of the time, as Ms. Bennett and Dr. Baldwin spoke of, then you may need to choose a different strategy to achieve the goal of public safety that you are aspiring for the jurisdiction.
And Brian, can I also jump in?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Kadeem Bennett.
I also think,
yeah.
you know, we've been on the Traffic and Pedestrian Stop Study Task Force and, you know, working on this issue for a number of years. It's interesting that the first reaction for a lot of law enforcement agencies is defensiveness. You know, the data is wrong. This can't be true. But we know from talking to people, their lived experience is different. And this can be an opportunity for transparency and conversation. So I think it would be great if departments looked at this like, oh, there's a discrepancy there. Why is there a discrepancy? What does it actually mean? Let's dig deeper into the data. Are we stopping people who are speeding? Or are we stopping them for lower level things like a broken taillight? Is that the thing we need to do? And then I think the more important part of it is then having a conversation with the community who's impacted. So what would it look like for campus police or municipal police to say, when the data comes out, here's the data, here's what it says, here's what we think we've done, here's how we are rationalizing it, and then have community people say, this is maybe what you think is happening, but here's the reality. Here are the number of times that we weren't even doing anything, or there was not a reason given for why we were stopped, or I was let out with a warning, or I was asked to do a consent search, because that could be a pretext for stopping people. I think it offers a really good opportunity for transparency, conversations with people who are impacted, and really thinking about policy approaches.
You know,
I just want to jump.
Go ahead. Yeah. Well, let me share just briefly, because it's some of these points. We got an email from a listener named Kathy who said her son was continually stopped by police because he drove a Nissan Maxima with dark windows. When he opened his driver's window, the officers who stopped him were surprised to see he's a white guy and not a black or Latino person. He was asked for his ID and generally let go with no ticket. He realized he was being stopped because the car he drove was one apparently preferred by minorities. He now drives a Nissan and never gets stopped. Professor Baldwin, over to you.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to say real quickly that the I think that there are some legitimate concerns, but it is telling that if we're talking about public safety and we have this, you know, very clear data that evidence the racial disparity in stops, the response is that we need to defend police officers. I don't see this data as an attack on police officers. It is actually a defense of public safety, that there is a significant portion of our communities that don't feel safe. So then to give a spectacular example of a car going 130 miles down and, you know, miles an hour down the highway for state troopers, which is grossly different than being in a sleepy college town or a large college town where these people are being stopped at stop signs, driving slowly through campuses. There's just two different variables, two different examples. And so I think that in the spirit of public safety, we need to be thinking about what is the impact on these drivers? What's the impact on the disproportionate surveillance of Black residents in these scenarios? And we know that just historically, but even today, these schools, their interest is to protect the safety of the institution. And these are predominantly white institutions. So those who are of different racial and economic backgrounds are seen as outsiders. They're not seen as within the interest of the institution. So they are not part of the purview of public safety. And so we have seen examples of what students in their organizing and their own research call a two-tier policing system, where a student and a resident or perceived resident go through, commit the same infraction. But while the student goes through the student affairs offices, the residents go through the criminal justice system. So if you have the disparity, there are gross consequences for the people that go beyond simply talking about defending the troops, defending the police officers. What are the outcomes? What are the consequences that have great impacts on our residents in the name of public safety?
800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. And let's now go to Sam calling from Rock Island, Illinois. Sam, thank you for calling in.
Hi, I think the study you've conducted is great. I think that you can take the same data but keep digging in further as to what the disparities mean. And for example, I know that here in Rock Island County, the NAACP had done a study. It was a longitudinal study several years ago over a 10-year period, and showed the total minority, comparing the total minority with the whites in the community. So what we saw was in that trend was the digging further. The white drivers were stopped more so for speeding versus the Black drivers stopped more so for lights, a light not working, or I don't know, some other situation. What we also have to consider too, and when digging into the data, is what time of day are the minorities being stopped? So, you know, that's just about it. But I hope the study, you know, continues with the part two and part three.
Thank you so much for the call, Sam. I really appreciate that. And all credit to the investigative project on race and equity, WBEZ and the Sun-Times, who did the study. Kadeen Bennett, you mentioned that sort of, are people being stopped for something like a taillight or headlight as opposed to speeding? Can you expound on that? And I should say briefly, because we need to take a break in another minute or so here.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've seen used as a tool by law enforcement is to make stops for minor infractions. So is there a taillight that's out? Is the license plate, does it have the accurate tags? Those kinds of things. And it's a precursor so that law enforcement can ask for a consent to search the vehicle. Most people feel, even though it's an ask, that it's a requirement, and that results in a consent search where people's cars are then law enforcement goes through it, they're staying on the side of the road, and in many cases, no contraband is found. But it still has a huge toll on that individual having to have, you know, been engaged in that process. Imagine if you're a college student at the side of the road, you're seeing your peers driving past you, and the assumption is that you've done something wrong, and all you've done is consent to a search that you didn't really have to do anyway.
All right, 800-222-9455 if you want to join us on the program today. We were going to talk about something else in the rest of the show, but I think this conversation is important enough and enough people are engaged in it that if as long as our guests are able to stay around for a few more minutes, we are going to continue on this subject after the break. Again, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about a recent report that found that at public universities in Illinois, campus police tend to pull over black drivers at much higher rates than would be suggested by their population on campus or in the surrounding communities. That piece is called, or I should say is from, the Investigative Project on Race and Equity, WBEZ, the public radio station in Chicago, and the Chicago Sun-Times as well. We're talking about all that with DeVarian Baldwin, a historian and distinguished professor of American Studies at Trinity College in, in Hartford, Connecticut. Thank you very much. There it is. Also, Miltonette Craig, an assistant professor of criminal justice and criminology at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. She was previously a professor at Illinois State in Bloomington Normal. And Kadeen Bennett, Director of Advocacy and Intergovernmental Affairs at the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois. 800-222-9455 is the number to join us today. 800-222-9455. And let's now go to Charles, who has been waiting on the line from DeKalb on line one. Charles, thank you for calling in.
Hi. The reason that I called was I was listening to the show specific to the, I believe her name was Nicole Johnson, and her mentioning of the students having to negotiate the system without any help. I just wanted to point out that here at NIU, there's a student legal services. Through their student fees, the students have legal representation. So they do not have to navigate as long as they contact us. They do not have to navigate that system without our help. I took a quick look at the SIU website, which she also mentioned, and they also have a student legal assistance office there. So I think it's important to point out that they do not have to navigate the system alone, that we're here to represent them, answer their questions, and get them the best representation possible.
I appreciate you mentioning that, Charles. Can I ask anecdotally, and you know, obviously within the bounds of what's ethical for you to talk about, but do you find you get a lot of African American students coming in saying that they are dealing with traffic stops, that sort of thing?
Brian, I've listened. You know, I have listened to your other presenters. The only requirement is that they be a current student. So don't keep track. And there's no requirement that I keep track of numbers, so I do not have numbers, specific to students and their race.
All right. Well, I appreciate you calling in and sharing that perspective. Thank you very much. Let's go now to Shelley on line three from Central Illinois. Shelley, thank you for calling in.
Yeah. Hi. It's been more than 30 years since I was a public defender, but worked in traffic, and state's attorney, public defenders, cops would all sit around in a room waiting for the judge to call our cases. And I vividly recall one day either a state trooper or a county sheriff's deputy saying, yeah, if I see Hispanics in the car with duct tape, that to me means drugs. I find a reason to pull them over. So they can say, yeah, we're enforcing public safety, but there's a race matter there as well.
All right, Shelley, thank you so much for that call. Kadeen Bennett, let me come back to you. So this data, Nicole, the reporter we had on earlier who was co-authored this story, mentioned then-State Senator Barack Obama, who helped pass or sponsored the law that allows all the collection of this data. That was more than 20 years ago at this point. What I mean, how would you rate how the state of Illinois has done writ large? You know, commissions, study groups. I believe you're on the group that, that looks at this data in terms of actually doing something with the data.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of time with collecting of the data, but the deep analysis that's needed, not just to analyze what we see, because I think even for myself, every year, it's like, you could see different parts of the state where there's disproportionate representation of Black drivers or pedestrians or Latino drivers or pedestrians as compared to their white counterparts. But I think now we're moving into not just getting the numbers, but what are we going to do about it? And I think this past task force, some of the things that we talked about is one, looking at the benchmarks and thinking through what are the holistic approach to looking at how the data is analyzed, and then putting a high priority on law enforcement, talking to people in communities about what the data is saying, as opposed to just saying this is not accurate for our community. I also want to go back to the caller who talked about the legal support for NIU students. You know, I do wonder if students may not come in to report that this has happened, because at some point you get numb to it. It happens all the time, so it's almost commonplace. And I think this is a really good opportunity for universities, after reading this article, to think through what can we do for our students. How can the university talk to their police, their campus police or municipal police, about why the numbers are what they are, and then inviting conversation by the students, and especially the Black students in this case, about what can the universities do to make them feel safer? Because as one of the other panelists said earlier, this is an issue about safety for them, about community safety. And if you don't feel like you're safe in your own community and you're being profiled, it does not bode well for your feeling of inclusion in that campus society as well.
All right, we have another caller on from Champaign on line two. Didn't want to give their name, but says they work with formerly incarcerated men. Caller, you're on the line.
Yes. Thank you for taking the call. And I hope this isn't overly offensive, but my life in the last, I'm white, and my life the last 6 years has been a lot in the hood among Black men. I teach them. I've had groups of 15, and there are neighborhoods where these guys say, no, man, don't go in there. Don't go in there. There is a problem in the community. The Champaign police just put charts up for us to show where the shootings are. Guns are a huge, huge issue, and the police are trying to work against public danger. There were two African-Americans who ran a show on West just recently, and they were saying out loud, we have a problem in our community. I've had 50 men shot, not all of them hit, only a couple killed. But we have, if you're going to be holistic, you have to look at the problem going on in the community that is dangerous. And the police, outnumbered, are trying to defend the community. And there was one woman here on WILL. She was a Black activist, and she shouted into the phone, we've got to investigate the people in our community. This has the defund the police, she said. Are you kidding? We need them to be more active. And so we get into more of a woke look at this, but we're afraid to bring up what's going on that makes danger. And the police don't want to stop people. They really, I spent a lot of time with police this last 6 years. They hate it. They hate having to take action like this. So this is my perspective from the real folks in my classes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I appreciate you taking the time to call in and share that perspective. I want to make sure our guests have a chance to respond to it. Professor DeVarian Baldwin, I'll come to you first.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love that the caller talked about a holistic approach. And so just a couple of factors to kind of disaggregate what we're talking about here. If we're talking about community, we're talking about campuses. We're not talking about the quote unquote hood. We're talking about college campuses. The report looks at not just, and I think this is important for the whole conversation, is not just looking at students that were stopped, but drivers that were stopped. And the drivers, the Black drivers that it supposedly stopped, are students, workers on the campuses, and residents who live in the surrounding communities or don't, are just driving through. And so also taking a holistic and not a woke approach to the conversation, let's look at violence on college campuses. The violence enacted on college campuses is disproportionately comes from white students on predominantly white campuses in the form of sexual violence, substance abuse, and petty theft and crime. So if you look at the statistics of campuses and the job of campus police to make campuses safe, why are they offering amnesty to the violators of campus violence and unsafety, and yet over-policing the so-called Black and brown residents who drive through or who work on or who attend these campuses? There was a gross disparity here that cannot just simply be identified by looking at the crime of the so-called hood. The hood here is the campus, and the crime is white kids, and they are not being adjudicated. They are not being policed. They're actually being provided amnesty because the job of campus police has primarily been brand ambassadorship, brand management. And no campus wants to admit that there is a problem with white-on-white violence on white campuses, because they want those white kids to come to those schools and spend their money. What appears to be safe in the name of public safety is over-policing so-called non-students, those who are Black, who are coming on campus to work, to study, or to drive through. That's the holistic approach. So I think that we need to have that in the conversation. These are not just students. These are residents. These are workers. And crime on campuses is predominantly white. So with those things in mind, why are Black drivers still disproportionately being stopped? It's
and
not crime.
I also wanted to add to that and kind of piggyback.
Yeah, Professor Milton and Craig, please go ahead.
Yes. And so one of the things that the unnamed caller mentioned had to do with firearms, even though that is not the subject of our discussion today. However, when police make stops and they do searches, whether that's going to be because they have probable cause or consent, and they look for contraband, they are also supposed to record whether or not contraband was found during that search. And so in the stop statistics, we'll also see something called a contraband hit rate. And that means that when a search was performed, something illegal was found during that search. And so if the holistic approach involves doing all of these stops and doing searches to take dangerous guns off of the street, but we see that the contraband hit rate is very low, that means that resources are not being used in the way that is actually effective, and that searches are being done on people who aren't threats, and that there is clearly not efforts that are reaching the supposed goal of public safety. And to the other caller's point about campus, like legal and mediation resources, a couple of things. It is wholly possible that students don't know that these are reasons that they can take to campus legal or mediation services. They don't know that a traffic ticket falls within the scope. So I think that goes to campus staff to do outreach and go to, you know, the quad in the campus, or ask professors to speak at, you know, for a couple of minutes at the beginning of class to advertise that the services exist, and then talk about the scope of problems that students can come. And even if they did know, I find that a student may say that there could be a conflict, because maybe they feel that if I'm going to campus legal, will they represent me in a ticket from campus police? And so just because the service is there doesn't mean that it is going to be something that students feel comfortable seeking assistance for if they get pulled over and get a ticket.
We are going to have to leave this conversation there. Obviously, there is more to say. We will continue another day. I want to thank Professor Milton Nett Craig of Sam Houston State University, Professor Devarian Baldwin of Trinity College in Connecticut, and Kadeen Bennett with the ACLU of Illinois. Thank you all so much for sharing your perspectives with us today here on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for having us.
And once again, if you want to look up the story, we'll have a link to it on our website, 21stshow.org. That is all the time we have for our program today. I want to suggest joining our texting group if you enjoy engaging with public conversations like the one we had today. We often will, sometimes before a show, we'll send out a text message asking people what they think about things, if they have questions or comments they want to hear on air. You can join that by sending the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. The number again is TALK, and you send it to 217-803-0730. And you can also find that on our website, 21stshow.org. We've also got our past shows there, or you can just find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Leili Nazarova is an associate producer, and our digital producer is Coulson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork, and Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.